Chicago. This is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, lots of them, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Art Sear, Scott Hibbert, Khalil Marar, and Robert Pate. Our program tonight coming from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. If you'd like to tweet me a comment, it's @Dumo, @DUMO. And, of course, if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, beyondthebeltway.com, where all of our past programs are archived. And if you miss it when we're live each and every week, you can always go, actually, within a couple of hours after the broadcast and go and get caught up if you've missed it. For the next couple of hours, we're going to be talking about foreign affairs specifically. The dominant story is the torture report, finally long overdue to at least to many Democrats, the long overdue report into the actions of the CIA and their interrogation techniques. And Scott Hibbert from DePaul University joins us. Scott, I want to get everybody's reaction from the get-go. Your reaction to the report.
Well, I think it's great that it's out. I think it's important for democracy. It's shocking, but it's nothing we didn't know.
Robert Pape from the University of Chicago.
I think it was no secret the U.S. used torture. The big secret that the report lets out is that it doesn't work.
Scott Millar joins us also from Khalil Marar, I'm sorry, from Governor State.
Yeah, you know, I think it shows the strength of the American system. I absolutely agree with the panelists. It's nothing new, but at the same time, I think it's time to come clean, and I think it's important, the timing of this.
Art Sear from Carthage College.
I agree with the other panelists. I'm a little concerned we may have too much agreement among all these reasonable people here tonight. I think it's certainly healthy for the democracy to have the debate, and it's a good sign that we're having this debate. I'm very sorry that given the intense partisanship of our time that it's become so partisan so quickly.
Yeah. Will this have an impact on the agency, and will it have an impact on the way the rest of the world views the United States?
Yes. I mean, I think there's already changes going on within the agency. In many respects, the changes began many years ago, but they will continue. I think it'll maybe more difficult for us to work with some other governments, but to me, what's going to be really interesting is to see how the CIA and its overseeing legislative bodies, you know, now interact, because that's the key part of the story is, you know, the Senate's, you know, the tension between the Senate Intelligence Committee and the CIA.
Isn't that the common denominator between what we're talking about now, CIA alleged abuses, and what the Church Committee investigation was back in the 1970s? The common denominator is then and now, oversight wasn't as aggressive as it should be, Art. You agree with that?
Oh, actually, I disagree. I think the Church Committee in those days was highly partisan. Frank Church was running for president as actively as he could. Dianne Feinstein, the current chair, another Democrat of the Senate Select Intelligence Committee, says she definitely does not want to be president. In the 60s, there was extensive domestic surveillance and manipulation of our system by the CIA and Army intelligence. That was truly shocking. There were some other shocking things that we can talk about if you want to.
Assassinating foreign leaders, that's one.
But where there is some
Robert
similarity is, is sunlight. I think both the Church Committee was part of a general transparency with America's policy of assassination that became more and more transparent as the 1970s went on. And since then, less and less common in U.S. policy, and probably to our benefit.
Art Sear, you disagree?
President Obama has been very, along with others in the administration, very blunt in denouncing these past practices. However, assassination is murder of a very high-profile person. We have greatly expanded our assassination of foreign leaders through use of drones during the Obama administration. So I would disagree concerning what we do in practice. It is an ugly practice, and it's interesting to me that after the Church report, President Gerald Ford, and then, interestingly enough, new President Ronald Reagan issued executive orders banning assassination. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we haven't pursued that policy. Again, it's a function of the context of the times. The church committee developed circumstantial evidence arguing that some of the excesses of the Kennedy administration in particular.
But I mean, what I'm trying to get to is whether or not this oversight that's been set up has been aggressive in reining in. I mean, they're saying that they didn't get all the information or that the CIA lied to them. I mean, how does that differ from what happened 35 years ago, Khalil?
Well, I don't think it's much different. I mean, the content might be different, but as far as the sort of overarching objective, it is two things. First, more transparency, and second, that we would rein in these sort of runaway federal agencies. And furthermore, I would note that, you know, the assassination of foreign leaders is not as, I guess, it's not the same scenario. I mean, the truth is these leaders that we're talking about are heads, or not heads, but people in terrorist organizations, not state leaders.
Let's bring it back to where we are right now, because the focus obviously is on, you know, we're not, yeah. I threw out the church thing. But
that's
sure.
important.
I didn't mean to,
it is
I didn't
important.
Mean to, well, it is important, but
it was very different
think,
back
I don't,
then.
I yeah. don't think it's as important at the moment about the dealing of the facts of the torture. That's what's yeah. happening right now. That's the story of the moment. When you look at this report, again, Dick Cheney was on Meet the Press today.
Yep.
He was 100% supportive of what was done. He thinks the report was a crock of, you know, blank. I don't think that was the word he had in mind. But basically, he said it was seriously flawed. And he said that when you talk about torture, that torture to him was, is an American citizen on his cell phone making a last call to his four young daughters shortly before he burns to death on the top floor of the World Trade Center on September 11, 2001. That, to him, is torture. He does not believe that any of the things that have been described are torture.
But look,
I'm wondering how many of the American people, although it may not be popular around this table, how many of the American people believe that Dick Cheney is right?
Well, it's a superficial argument because it's kind of a bait and switch. You know, no one wants to defend, you know, the 9/11 attacks because that was a crime. It wasn't torture; it was a crime. This is a very different issue. It's whether or not, you know, government policies should be implemented that are used in coercive interrogation. What's interesting for me is the report really focused on this question of, you know, was it effective? And the report concluded that it wasn't effective and it was counterproductive and the intelligence agencies consciously misled both Congress and the White House as to the effectiveness of these techniques. Now, going back to Cheney, he seems to me to be doing basically what the CIA has been doing and continues to do, and that is to try to, you know, mislead the American public on, you know, on the effectiveness of these tactics.
And we should emphasize that there's ultimately a difference between us and them. I mean, Dick Cheney cannot have it both ways. The difference between us and terrorist organizations is that they can get away with those things with impunity. I fear that at this point, Dick Cheney being out there defending torture with impunity is something that we have to rein in as a country. We have to ask whether this is acceptable or not, and Cheney is completely saying that, of course, that's what we do.
I don't think there's much real sympathy in the American public for the terrorists. At the same time, I think there's a real question about how effective we are pursuing the terrorists. And it's very important that we not lose sight of the effectiveness issue.
All right. Well, when we come back, we're going to follow up on that. 1-800-723-8289.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton Los Angeles Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
So
Bruce Dumont back. Thanks very much for joining us. 1-800-723-8289 is the telephone number. I mentioned that Dick Cheney, the former vice president, was on Meet the Press today with Chuck Todd. I know you had a chance to see it. Art, your reaction to the appearance of the vice president defending the actions of the CIA?
I think he'd be better off if he did what former President George W. Bush does, who obviously absorbed good lessons from his father, the first President Bush, and has said nothing about the current administration. I don't think the former vice president helps himself or helps the cause with these very...
Just to finish the point,
with these very, very emotional, very direct, and very personal references, sure he was. He's criticizing the current administration, and since you asked me, let me make sure I'm clear in telling you, no. I think it's a big mistake, unwise for him and for his office.
So you, in other words, you don't believe there should be any public official who's out there speaking in a very supportive way, and really, basically, he wasn't backing away from his role in these decisions.
No, that's not what.
And he's basically clarifying that many of these things were known by he was the one that said the report said they tried to whitewash Bush out of it. He's the one that said the president knew about it. He ordered these things. He was aware of these programs. The Department of Justice looked at these techniques. I mean, shouldn't there be somebody from a former administration that's out there that's willing to at least talk about it as opposed to just hush up?
May I now respond?
Sure.
Without interrupting you? I believe that if you're a former president of the United States or vice president, especially in his very powerful role, you're well advised not to appear on television shows. You're well advised to conduct yourself like G.W. Bush and like, for that matter, his father. There's plenty of people from the former administration and plenty of current and former members of Congress, to say nothing of talking heads, who are very influential with the American viewing public, who talk about these things. I think it was very unwise for Cheney to do this. I don't think he's helping himself.
Lil, what do you think?
I mean, look, if we lived in a different context, the guy would basically be admitting to a high crime, which is impeachable. I mean, if you have a sitting vice president of the United States of America
what is the crime here?
Essentially, the violating the Constitution, the protection of the liberties and civil rights that we have worked so hard to upbuild in this country.
The civil rights of terrorists?
The civil rights of everyone. I mean, look, these
civil
people are
rights,
not,
the civil rights of foreign terrorists, where is that dealt with?
They have to be tried, and they have to have due process.
During war?
It depends
and
on
be combat.
That's not what's potentially at issue in the U.S. Congress. There was a great piece by the head of the ACLU about a week ago in the New York Times calling for preemptive pardoning of President Bush and Vice President Cheney. And what he is talking about, this is the head of the ACLU, mm-hmm. What he's talking about is the claim in the report that there were details of significance that were denied to especially President Bush. Now, even if Dick Cheney knew them, the issue is whether there were details denied to Bush. That's why that issue, if you don't mind me saying on the air, this issue of the rectal feeding detail, mm-hmm. which is we could make fun of, but nonetheless, this is a detail that was not approved. It's not part of these famous memos. It's not at all clear the president knows about this, and yet it's quite and very. It's an important step beyond, and there are other details as well. And this is what I'm not saying that this could happen, but I do think it's fair to note that Cheney is actually defending himself personally, and I agree with Art that this is not necessarily going to be the wisest of moves down the road if this were ever to become an issue.
And particularly when there are other former administration officials out there, including former heads of the CIA, that are out there making the case in a very forceful manner. So, but I think you're right. When I was watching him on Meet the Press, I kept thinking this guy's defending his record. I mean, he really is vested in not just this policy, but all the policies.
Well, he is also, in my view, he is out there reminding the American people of what the procedure, what America was like on September 11th,
which is important.
What the reaction was, because there's people growing up that don't necessarily remember that, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Reminding the political climate, and also basically touting his record that for the rest of that administration, there were no other attacks. And the question that I posed in the last segment was the I don't want to use the word, the average American, a large percentage of America, frankly, doesn't care about the tactics as long as the United States was protected.
They don't.
I think they, and they certainly don't want to, they don't want to have it thrown in their face. And so long term, I don't see how this helps the Democrats with the general public.
When Cheney put his hand on that Bible, he swore to defend the Constitution of the United States,
right,
come heck or high water. You cannot throw out the Constitution.
Where did he throw it out?
He threw it out by putting people, literally subjecting them to torture without ever trying them. These individuals, for example, even Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. I'm not defending Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. What I'm saying, however, is that we have due process for a reason. You don't violate due process just to get at some tactic, which doesn't work anyway.
And there was a Supreme Court decision, Rasul versus Bush, which does guarantee even people that are non-citizens rights for habeas corpus that are being held by the United States.
By the way, this has come up a couple of times, and I would just you referenced it, Bob, and that is this was CIA Director John O'Brien, who had an unprecedented televised press conference last week in responding to this. He called the methods were abhorrent. The question of whether the specific enhanced interrogation techniques prodded detainees into giving up unique information is unknowable.
Of course.
Now, you said that it didn't prove anything.
So this is very helpful, because what we've known before the report is that there was torture, and the torture was costly. What we didn't know is we had very little information about whether we got any benefits from the torture other than simply assertions. What both the Senate report and Brennan's report, which I've read, Brennan's report's 136 pages, they go into the details of whether it was effective. And the range of opinion is not that Brennan is saying, oh, yes, it was decisively, surely effective. Here's the smoking gun. He's saying,
well, who is saying that?
Hold it. Nobody with detail is saying that. What the range of opinion here by the experts is the CIA is saying maybe, possibly, although we can't be sure. And then Feinstein's report is saying no. There's no one taking the position with any actual facts that there's a smoking gun success.
Does it bother you that no CIA people were interviewed for this?
The report itself, first of all, they sent the Feinstein report to the CIA. That's where this 130-page report by Brennan came from. It's a response to the Senate report. So it's not true that there's been no engagement. Second, Brennan's report says that even though it's unknowable whether this was effective, he would never support it again. So let me just be clear. The CIA is now saying that however marginally effective this was, it wasn't worth the cost.
Art, and then we're going to go to calls.
That's also in line with the lessons of history. Torture on occasion, rare occasion, I think, is defensible if planned carefully. That's one of the lessons of World War II and just about every other war.
Where's it worked?
Doing it random in World War II?
Yeah.
I think it worked in terms of, we don't know for sure, but in terms of...
Well, that's the point. We don't know for sure.
What I'm saying is that those who were victorious used it very, very selectively, at least on the Western Front. The British had 9 camps in which high-profile prisoners were kept. Records of Churchill's order were destroyed right after the war. However, there's reasonably good circumstantial evidence that it was extremely helpful in getting a detailed profile of German forces.
Got it. So let's get back to this. I just want to reiterate the kind of main point of this report is asking this question, what were these techniques effective?
Right.
And what the Feinstein or the Senate report finds is that it's not. And it's not based upon the CIA's own documents. And,
that's right.
And I, personally, I would have wished they would have interviewed some of the CIA leadership. There's reasons why they didn't.
Anything.
Yeah, I mean, there's also an ongoing DOJ investigation, which kind of precludes them from actually, bringing them up to Congress. But, but the point is that the CIA's documents themselves, and including this internal review done during Leon Panetta's time, demonstrate that it clearly was not effective. And what I found really interesting
do you believe that it was totally ineffective? In other words, these techniques did not result in any significant knowledge learned by anybody
the
that stopped them. The number one thing
we wanted out of torture was information about a future plot that was going to kill Americans, an actual plot. I don't mean just getting a leader. Yes, we'd like that too. But the number one thing we wanted, and when people support torture, when Zubaydah, the number three in al-Qaeda, was captured in May 2002, that's when the first discussions of torture happened. The University of Chicago, typically thought of as fairly liberal, I was part of a two-hour seminar where, because this was such a big deal, we had an internal discussion about this. 75% of 15 people, who I won't name around the table, supported torturing Zubaydah because we worried about information about a plot. Number three. What did we learn? We did torture them. We tortured them a lot. We tortured other very top leaders. And what did we get about plots? Zilch. That is, now we can debate whether we got
misinformation.
We actually got misinformation. Yeah. We can debate whether there was some second order information, like information about the courier that, you know, maybe helped us like 5 years later somehow get bin Laden. So I'm not saying that there's necessarily zero, but the thing we most wanted was a plot.
Yeah, we should qualify this too. Abu Zubaydah turns out to be not number three. It's not even clear whether or not he's even a member of al-Qaeda. He was a member of the Taliban.
He was said to be number
three.
But
it turns out not to be the case.
We've got to pause. 1-800-723-8029, taking America's political pulse, talking about the cult of the torture report. And we'll be back with your let you weigh in when we come back from Chicago.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
My biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Give the gift of Larry King this holiday season. Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let us now have our guests introduce themselves, and we begin with Scott Hubbard.
Hibbard, yes. So I'm Scott Hibbard. I teach in the Department of Political Science at DePaul University here in Chicago.
Art Sear.
I work at the Clausen Center, an international center at Carthage College in Kenosha, just north.
Khalil Marar.
I'm an assistant professor in the Department of Politics and Justice Studies at Governor State University.
Robert Pape.
I'm a professor at the University of Chicago and author of Bombing to Win, which is a study about air power, and Dying to Win, which is a study of suicide terrorism.
And a little bit later on in the broadcast, we're going to talk about the effectiveness of the air campaign being used against ISIS as we speak. But let's take some calls. Let's go to David listening to us on KLBJ in Austin, Texas. Go ahead, please.
Tip of the hat to our host for attempting to bring some objective conversation. Which of you have experience in the military?
Does that work for you?
Which of you have
I spent 3 years teaching for the U.S. Air Force in the 1990s, but that was as a civilian professor.
Art Sear.
I was in the U.S. Army.
I've lived overseas, but I haven't served in the military.
Okay. Go ahead.
And earlier you asked about citizens who would call in and support enhanced interrogation, and that would be me. Americans don't support torture. But to the betterment of our country and the protection that we've voted these guys in to do, we support enhanced interrogation for safety. So if you have a question of a citizen who supports that, let me hear it.
I'm not at all surprised to hear, sir, that there's a fair bit of support for enhanced interrogation techniques. As I just said a few minutes ago, in circles at the University of Chicago, I'd say it was about 75% in the spring of 2002. I think the real question is not whether you can use torture or enhanced techniques to get people to talk, but can you get the truth? And can you actually get actionable intelligence that will save lives by stopping a plot? And what I think we have seen in detail in this rather robust report, and even if you look at the CIA's response, which I've read both, it's really shocking how little actual valuable information, and I don't think anybody's life was saved as a result of the torture.
And you know, one of
you
the
may
things
not think so, but the fact that the report is being used as a basis for the truth is inaccurate because our host has already clarified that we deem it incomplete. So thinking about what's come and the safety of America, what's happened since 9/11.
Well, what I would say, sir, if you look at the report, I think you'll see that we're used to getting a lot of congressional reports that are full of hot air. That's not what's in this 600 pages. It reads more like a criminal indictment that you would expect from a prosecutor.
And it's the bias and position a lot of liberals have about the defense of America.
Sir, I think we've had a week of discussion of bias. I'm talking about the actual substance of the 600 pages. And I'm telling you, sir, I'm not trying to tell you it is open and shut true. What I'm telling you is it's like an indictment.
Go ahead, caller, and then go ahead.
A two-hour symposium or seminar of like-minded people sitting around finding cause and this as a basis to justify their position does not validate the report as thorough.
By the way, I want to stay on the line, David, but I want to talk about one other thing that came out of the discussions today. One thing that Vice President Cheney had to say was, you know what, he didn't think this met the definition of torture. He didn't define what it was, but he didn't think this was torture. And they went, Chuck Todd went through all of the things, the gruesome, brutal things that are included in this report. And Dick Cheney did not think they measured up. He also said that President Bush knew about it. He said that the Department of Justice had approved each and every one of those things. Now, whether or not someone in the field decided to go beyond that, that may be the case. But he also said what torture – I mentioned earlier how he defined torture, that the attack on 9/11, that was torture. Defined it. He also said currently ISIS – they don't torture people. They cut their heads off.
I think
they
torture people as well, Bruce. We don't want to let ISIS off the hook. They torture people as well.
But the visual way is they cut people's heads off. And it was not Cheney that said this, but it came up in the further discussion, is there are those people that argue, those people that are against our drone strikes. In fact, I think you were one, Khalil.
Right.
You think drone strikes, that's torture.
It's
if you're
form.
Killed, well, form
of,
if
more
you're
of a crime.
Dead,
yeah. It's more of a crime than a.
killing people is the ultimate torture, isn't it?
Look, that's why we have to talk about things like due process. That's why we have to talk about procedure. I mean, we have to enable the system
to allow people to not only be convicted
without trial, but we have to try them and convict them in order for us to be able to punish them. We cannot punish them.
Hang on 1 second. Let's let Khalil finish, and then we'll go to you, David, with the last word.
Again, the point is that our leadership swore to uphold the Constitution. These actions are inconsistent with constitutional protections that we take for granted and that we have had established for over 200 years in this country. That in and of itself is evil.
You think it's evil? Art?
No, I think torture is justified in certain circumstances, but the report makes it clear that it was used very broadly. And the most important point is historically and currently, it doesn't provide good information.
David, we're going to move on. Let's go to Dan in Poplar Grove, Illinois, listening to us on WLS. You're on the air.
Thanks, David.
Yes, I was just listening to some comments earlier, and actually I've got a couple of points. But the first one I had mentioned to the screener was that talking about protecting civil rights and so on and so forth, And I think that applies to citizens of this country and not, you know, enemy combatants is what we're talking about here.
My citizenship test was about citizens and non-citizens. That's the answer to who the Constitution protects.
Well, actually, our legal – that's a very good question. The administration, especially the vice president and also Defense Secretary Rumsfeld, said from the start these men – I don't think any women were involved – have no rights. They're not American citizens, and this is not – a war in the conventional sense. They have no rights. Point number one, the U.S. military was quite heroic, and I make that point in the op-ed for next week I sent to you, gentlemen. The U.S. military was quite heroic in combating this and ultimately having Rumsfeld and the vice president overruled. Secondly, ending with the U.S. Supreme Court, as Scott pointed out, there was a long consideration of this by our federal legal system, and the Bush administration was forced to backtrack. In fact, you do have rights not to a jury trial, but something. The Supreme Court, a conservative group today, said you have to give them something. You have to have some kind of due process. And we accommodated our law and Constitution. In that sense, Khalil is right.
And part of that is just to make sure that you're actually holding the people you think you're holding. And again, this goes back to the Abu Zubaydah case. I mean, we have
human rights. It's in our Declaration of Independence, even more explicitly than our Constitution. Everyone has a right in our system.
All men and women.
And women.
Candace, let's go to you, listening to us in Chicago. You're on the air. Go ahead,
Candace.
Thank
you for taking my call, Bruce. The comment I wanted to make was when the leader of the CIA comes on national television this week and says it does work, that would counterpoint what your liberal guy was just saying. I mean, he's kind of the head of things and kind of knows if it works or not, you know. So to me, this is a non-issue, and I don't know why it's still being discussed. And can I add one more comment?
Which guy is the liberal guy?
I think we're all the liberal guys. Probably.
I think all of you.
Yeah, I think the reason, I think the reason, ma'am, that it's part of the national discussion is because it's really quite amazing the level of detail in the report, and even you would not have such a ferocious counterattack to the report if the report didn't have some fire there, and that's really what you're saying.
Well, I disagree.
Let me just say this respectfully, okay? We are fighting people that don't have any code. Okay, and then you want our soldiers to go into the line of fire with these ridiculous new rules that are getting a lot of
the other side doesn't
follow any rules whatsoever, as we can see with ISIS and groups like this. They have no codes, no conduct, no nothing. You know, so to me, it's all about protecting our citizens, and it's nothing about these silly little rules that have been created internationally. When we do most of the war, when we fight most of the wars for most countries, okay?
Candace, let me ask you a follow-up, and then Bob's wants to respond as well. Do you believe that America is better than the rest of the world?
I think we're an exceptional nation.
Yes.
Better than the rest of the world?
Yeah.
Do I think that we stand for something better? Yes, definitely.
Okay. Then because of who we are, and you and I agree who we are, should there be a higher standard, and should we hold ourselves to a higher standard than we would other people in the world that you and I would both agree are brutal, and we wish they were wiped off the face of the earth?
Not if we're fighting those people. And sending boys into that line of fire, no. I think we should. War is war, and it's disgusting and ugly, and that's the way it's supposed to be.
Candace,
it's not supposed to be some politically correct ridiculousness, you know?
Yeah.
I just don't understand that.
So, Candace, if you don't mind me just saying, so I spent 3 years teaching for the U.S. Air Force. I spent a fair bit of my time talking to the military, and the U.S. Air Force sends me some of their leading officers every year to get PhDs at the University of Chicago. They're not doing this because they think that somehow I'm anti-military. And the senior people in the Air Force, I mean the officers, and this is true in the Army, this is true in the Marines, this is true in the Navy, they have no sympathy for the bad guys. They would agree with you 100%. But that does not mean that we shouldn't care about what works. What they care most about is effectively defending our country and our troops in battle effectively. And sometimes, some means you might think, which could be very, you know, callous, like indiscriminate firebombing of the enemy, actually just makes matters worse.
Yeah.
And so they really do care about effectiveness, and that's what I'm trying to talk about.
But also in a case like 9/11, there's the political equation. The political aspect of it is the American political leaders had to respond to a public that was demanding tough action. Yes. They
there
wanted
is no
reaction.
Doubt about that,
the
Bruce.
The political reaction to that, not only from every politician that supported this or was even perhaps aware and briefed on this, because the American people at that moment in time supported it. We wanted to get, there was an element of revenge as part of the American foreign policy. I think it still exists. And revenge may be it may be a fact of life in this world. Anyway, thanks for your call. We're going to come back with more calls. 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont back. Let's go back to calls. Let's go to Gaul, listening to us in Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin. Great. On WLS. Go ahead. You're on the air, Gaul.
Neck of the woods.
Gail.
Yes, good evening. And my only comment really was, if we are truly the best nation in the world, then we need to raise the bar at all levels, always.
That's from Wisconsin.
Well said. Well said, Gail.
Everybody agrees with that, but obviously Candace does not agree with that. And sometimes, when you're in a fight, and you think you're losing the fight, sometimes your head and your heart and the element of revenge gets involved.
And
I think that's human nature.
Especially when we feel like we're losing, that's when we should even step up to the plate, higher level. It shouldn't be. There should be no exception.
And interestingly, world leaders have started to say exactly that they are impressed that the United States is being able to put its money where its mouth is. In fact, the new leader of Afghanistan, if you just Google, you'll see that when he read the Feinstein report, of course, number one, he wanted to see if there were any Afghan citizens involved.
Right.
But number two, what he said was, it was stunning to see a country finally step up and look at its own policies.
No. Well, I think that is the strength of America.
Is
that we are able to do this.
Absolutely.
And a lot of people are upset about it, but again, it is the strength that we survived all the investigations of the Church Committee. We've survived this.
Yeah.
Actually, the CIA, I think, was ultimately strengthened by that. I don't think it was completely destroyed.
Absolutely.
As some suggest. Scott.
Briefly, one of the reasons why I was happy the earlier callers chimed in is they do make what's commonly referred to as the necessity defense, that in extraordinary times, extraordinary measures are called for. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the environment we were in the post 9/11 era. But again, you go back to that issue of effectiveness. Does this really work? And I think, we come back again and again, that it didn't work. And if I just last comment on this, even the CIA's own internal review, done under Leon Panetta, found that it didn't work. And the Feinstein report echoes that Panetta review, and it's one of the reasons why the Panetta review has not been released. So.
Let's go to Helen, listening to us at Evergreen Park on WLS. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm curious why nobody's bringing up the remarks of John McCain,
mm-hmm. yep.
somebody who knows full well what it was like to be tortured, right. And when he came out the other day and he said, we're a better country than that, we've owned up to the fact that we've done this, we should not torture. Unlike Dick Cheney, who never served his country, and I'm really sick of all those chicken hawks that are so brave, but they've never done anything for our country.
Yeah. Right on, man.
Well, I think there's a lot to what you say. In fact, in the administration, Colin Powell was the one who served in the military the most, and he was the one who was most concerned about this. In fact, so concerned that in 2003, the administration, Dick Cheney, was trying to keep the knowledge of the interrogation, the torture from him.
Right.
That's an extremely important point. Ibn Sheikh al-Libi, who's not to be confused with some other al-Libis wandering around in the media today, was a principal source. After an al-Qaeda official, after being tortured, he gave persuasive testimony that al-Qaeda was supported hand in glove by Iraq, that Saddam Hussein was a principal backer, that Saddam was working on weapons of mass destruction. I'm sure he hysterically, or maybe calculatingly, said all kinds of things, which turned out to be utterly false. Vice President Cheney, whom we've rightly been focusing on tonight, his staff seized on that. They fed that to Colin Powell. And one reason why Colin Powell has felt so angry as a good soldier, he's remained mute in public, a good example for some others. He felt that he was misled on the basis not of lies, but lousy intelligence. You seize the intelligence you want to hear when you're in these stressful situations. And the Bush people, except for Powell and one or two others at the top, did that. Starting with the president and the vice president, they wanted information that would justify what they wanted to do.
And just to elaborate on that, it goes back to Robert's earlier point that, you know, but waterboarding people will elicit information, not necessarily good information. And al-Libi was rendered to Egypt. And it was under torture by the Egyptian security services that he, you know, came up with all this information. And, you know, again, if you're having your fingernails pulled out, you'll say whatever you need to say to get it to stop.
Which is why I mentioned the British. Another good example is Eisenhower, who was obsessed during the war and during his administration with good intelligence. I mean obsessed. And a principal reason I believe why Ike looks better all the time was nothing seriously went wrong for 8 years.
Yeah.
If he'd given a free hand to the torturers, or if the British had, in my earlier example during the war, things would have turned out much worse.
Well, the one thing about that you talk about Cheney, the point is that at that particular moment, Dick Cheney, with possible the exception of the President of the United States, probably had more access to more intelligence than any other person in government. And he reacted. Most people
reacted to what he wanted. That's right. There were all kinds of other signals coming in, but he seized on what he wanted.
You don't know that he only reacted to what he wanted to.
I think the record's very clear. We invaded Iraq. Secondly, Bob Woodward, in his second of no less than four books on the Bush administration, described very persuasively that Dick Cheney on Inauguration Day, not 9/11, but Inauguration Day 2001, was obsessed with Iraq.
He was.
He wanted to get rid of Saddam Hussein.
I don't question that he was obsessed with Iraq, but what I'm just saying is, of all the political leaders that we're talking about now, he was probably more privy to more information. You're saying that basically he was cherry-picking what he wanted to know. I don't think you know that as a fact. You believe that because you're not a big Dick Cheney fan.
All I can do, Advocate Dumont, is look at the evidence. All I can do as a simple American
and
is look
at the evidence. And the evidence that I look at is that as long as he was the vice president and George Bush was the president, there wasn't another attack on the United States.
But that's not necessarily a result
of what matters.
I think that's why.
Going to what matters today, notice there's not even a single Republican calling for enhanced interrogation techniques today.
The Republicans on the committee voted to release the report.
All I'm just saying is the record should be clear, even though he's very unpopular with certain people around this table and maybe a lot of people listening. The fact is Dick Cheney was vice president of the United States along with George Bush. They protected the American people with means that a lot of people are now looking at, questioning whether or not it was successful or not. The one thing was, there was not another direct attack on the United States.
President Obama governed since 2009, ended the practice, and there hasn't been an attack on the United States.
And I give the same credit to him and to his attorney general.
As we should.
As well we should. But we shouldn't throw Dick Cheney, in my view, and John Ashcroft under the bus. We've got a pause. We'll be back if you're watching us on television. We won't be back if you're listening to us on radio. We'll be back with more calls in the next hour. 1-800-723-8289.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair, see Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
My biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Give the gift of Larry King this holiday season. Order your gift certificate now. Live from from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight featuring commentary by Art Sear of Carthage College, Scott Hibbert of DePaul University, Khalil Marar from Governor State, and Robert Pape from the University of Chicago. Our phone lines open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. You can tweet us at Dumo. And if you can go to our website, it's beyondthebeltway.com. We have lots of callers on the line. Let's bring them into our conversation right now. Let's go to Dave, listening to us in Barrington, Illinois, on WLS, the radio home of Dan Proft. Go ahead.
Yeah, good evening.
Good evening.
I was listening to Bob Schieffer. I think it's on Face the Nation. Uh-huh. I think it was Senator Chambliss.
Yes.
And interesting statistic. Out of 789 detainees in Guantanamo, only three were waterboarded.
We did it. We outsourced that.
It sounded like they were waterboarding hundreds of people.
We outsourced.
Art Sears got a comment.
We reportedly, including the current report, reports we're discussing on the CIA, we outsourced a huge amount of that, not only to the Middle East, but also Eastern Europe, in particular Poland.
Look, and there's actually an important point here that the report is only on one program run by the CIA that deals with secret prisons and 119 high value detainees. It doesn't deal with Guantanamo Bay. It doesn't deal with Abu Ghraib. It doesn't deal with the Department of Defense's program. It certainly doesn't deal with the rendition program. So
that's a small number to me at Guantanamo. Only three people ought to be. I'm not familiar with the other.
I think that number is inaccurate.
We tortured many people outside of Guantanamo Bay. That's the point that we're trying to get across, and it's an important one. We didn't do this at Guantanamo, but we did do it.
And one of the things I think to notice is the reason the number of waterboardings were so small is because President Bush canceled waterboarding after 2003.
Why?
So that because it wasn't effective. And if you look at the information in the report, which dovetails with what's also in the CIA's report, you can see that the waterboarding, which was the most aggressive torture that we did, was just producing garbage information that was not just unreliable, but was just putting us in phony directions.
And on that point, we have to ask the question, we talk a lot about faulty intelligence that led up to the Iraq War. We have to ask the question of to what extent did that faulty intelligence come about as a result of torture?
Ibn Sheikh al-Libi. Yeah, by late 2003, it was clear that something wasn't going right in Iraq.
Dave, thanks very much for your call. Let's move to Joe in El Paso, Texas, listening to us on KTSM. Nice to hear from El Paso tonight. Go ahead, Joe.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. Mine's a two-part question, if you don't mind.
Sure.
First off, dealing with the drone strikes, if what we did as far as enhanced interrogation techniques, would you consider the drone strikes also be torture and therefore illegal?
It's a horrible comparison to say that drone strikes are – it's either drone strikes or torture. I mean, I don't think that our nation should be engaged in things that violate our Constitution. But go on, please.
Can I answer that? Can I answer that? There was two individuals that happened to be U.S. citizens that were not afforded – the opportunity to defend themselves in
excellent
court,
point.
And that were ordered, and they were ordered by the president to take them out with drones.
Well, what I would say is we have not yet had a thorough review of the drone program. So the Senate report on torture, enhanced interrogation techniques, is the most detailed review that's been made public of interrogation of individuals. What we don't have is anything that goes anywhere near that depth on drones. So there's a large claim, for instance, by the CIA, that our drones have never killed a civilian. Well, largely because we tend to define anybody who's an adult male between the ages of 18 and 55 as not a civilian. And there's
Bad guys, right?
What about the 164 children that were in Pakistan that have been claimed?
I'm not defending the drones. No. I'm not telling you what I'm telling you is that we don't have the real basis of information to be able to get into the details. We know that there were children that were killed. We know that there were some bad guys who were killed. What we don't have is a serious analysis like we had with the Senate
on
drones.
Have we significantly decimated leadership of terrorist organizations and, using drones?
Well, the answer is no.
One second. Bob, and well, then go back.
Yeah,
to
we'll
you.
Go back one to you, second, sir, so. In just one second. The answer is we know that we have killed the leader of ISIS and its forerunners three times.
Right.
We haven't just killed leaders once or twice of various terrorist organizations. We've killed leaders a lot with drone strikes. And there is temporary disruption of a few weeks, sometimes even a few months. But what you see over and over again is rather rapid regeneration.
Last word to you, and then we're moving on, Joe.
Okay. My last question is, if it is found to be illegal and a form of torture, which one of you and there were the senators that are involved in this report are willing to lead the investigation and end the subsequent lawsuit against the president on these drone strikes?
This may be coming from the ACLU, sir. If you go and look, I mentioned this last hour, the president of the ACLU just wrote a rather lengthy op-ed in the New York Times. The ACLU is the most likely institution, the organization whose goal is connected with this, and you may see this coming.
Susan in Frankfort, okay. Illinois, you're on WLS and Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Susan.
Hi. I'm a mother of a Marine and an aunt of a Marine. And, you know, it's amazed. We give so much so-called rights to these terrorists, but we forget about our military. My son was serving in Camp Bastion. And when Prince Harry was on the base, we were attacked. They were getting shot at. They could see where the bullets were coming from, but they were not allowed to shoot back because they couldn't see the guy's eyes. So my son had to stand there, watch his friends get shot, and risk getting shot himself. But we have to be careful so we don't offend the terrorists.
Susan,
that, I think, is backwards.
You're absolutely right. With all due respect, that's what makes our military the finest in the world, is that we have to discriminate between civilians and non-civilians. And with all due respect, ma'am,
if we can let our moms get killed because they can't shoot back.
With all due respect, this is about the protection of people like your son and people that you're an aunt to. It's about the protection of those soldiers. We would put them in harm's way if we don't discriminate between somebody who's a combatant and somebody who's a non-combatant. It is proven.
So a non-combatant can be shooting at a military, but you can't shoot at them, right?
Well, I think that's incorrect. If somebody's shooting at you, you have a right to shoot back under military.
I hear you guys talking about the Constitution, that we have to follow this all. But yet, where was the Constitution followed when it came to the IRS? We still can't even get the information about why that White House wanted the taxpayer information, which is a violation of the Constitution, but that can't be seen.
Look,
as for weapons of mass destruction,
ma'am,
there were weapons.
Ma'am, you are quite right to be concerned about your son. You're quite right that it's a terrible situation if there's incoming mortars and there's incoming rounds coming from a general area and he's not allowed to shoot back. And we don't know your son's situation specifically, but what we do know is there are many times when overreaction has produced even bigger recruits for the terrorists.
There were two generals that were demoted because they wouldn't let him fight back.
Susan, we've got to move on, but thank you very much, and thank your son for his service to the country.
Yes, thank him.
1-800-723-8029. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, City Walk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
Bruce Dumont back. Thanks very much for joining us. 1-800-723-8029. Full board of lights. Let's go to Waterville, Michigan. Joe is listening to us on WLS, our flagship station. Go ahead, Joe.
Hi. I've listened to just your discussion about the rights of the terrorists. And as part of that discussion, I've not heard any discussion about the rights of the 3,000 Americans that died on 9/11, the men, women, and children. Men, women, and children that died. Their rights are gone because their lives are gone. What about that as part of the discussion?
Well, you are addressing something that literally Art was leading a discussion of during the commercial break, and that is, you know, our last caller was identified herself as the mother of a soldier, and obviously she has a vested interest. She has a very personal, a very emotional response to what her son has been going through based on the story that she told. And yet, you know, around the table this evening, we have learned guests. We have people who are somewhat dispassionate about specifically what's going on here. For the most part, they've sort of agreed with the basis of this report. And I'm just wondering, it sort of speaks to what I referred to was the political equation here. The political equation in the wake of 9/11, Democrats and Republicans, liberals and conservatives, for the most part, agreed. The Patriot Act, the response that we had was visceral. It was emotional. It was political. It wasn't dispassionate. That's what the American people wanted, and that's what they wanted from their leaders. And those people that were sent to make sure that it never happened again, some of them may have gone overboard in trying to get information because they believed that the tactics would work. We are now many, many years later where the United States Senate, primarily Democrats in the United States Senate, and people and academics all over America are saying tisk, tisk to those people that were reacting in real time with real emotion because real death and knowing that it was a direct attack on the United States of America. That's powerful, emotional stuff. And many times, gentlemen, we try to separate the emotion from the intellect. And sometimes it's... The political response is generally dealing with emotion, not intellect.
We confronted evil on 9/11. There is no doubt the death of those 3,000, it was a result of an evil act by an evil group. Evil works its magic, however, sometimes directly and sometimes by making others more evil. And it's true, to confront evil, sometimes you have to be tough. But what's great about America is that we've made mistakes in the past, slavery, for instance. We've made mistakes. We've confronted evil in the past. And we have found a way, by looking it square in the eye, to not simply become evil.
No, I agree, but believe me, I agree with that. I agree that there should be investigations. I mean, longtime listeners to this program know I am not a huge knee-jerk reaction supporter of the CIA. They have been involved in many abuses and wiretapping and things of civil liberties. I generally come down on left side of that discussion, if you're a regular listener, or certainly the libertarian position. But I also have to put it in the context of real politics, and that is, what was America demanding? And there is an element of revenge that I think is human nature.
Yeah. And you know, the context was very visceral. The post 9/11 environment was, you know, very emotional. But what I find interesting about the report, and I don't want to sound like a broken record here, is it's not asking about whether or not torture is moral. It's not asking about whether or not what this program was legal. It's really just getting back to this question, was it effective?
Yeah.
And I keep thinking about this line by Don Rumsfeld. Are we, you know, killing more terrorists than we're creating?
Right.
And whether we're talking about drones or talking about this program, right. At the end of the day...
Do you think we are, Cliff?
Yeah. The people that are in ISIS right now, especially the mid-range leadership, a lot of them were locked up and let go, and as a result, have become more evil. It goes back to this idea of evil engendering evil.
It was a mistake to let them go. It was a mistake to let them go then.
It was a mistake. It was a mistake to detain them in the first place, and then to treat them that way, right? And furthermore, and this is something that directly speaks to what Dr. Pape and Dr. Hibbert are talking about, and that is that you are basically creating more terrorists than you are killing off, than you are torturing, and we have to confront this question as a nation. First of all, was it constitutional? And just as importantly, is this something that we ever want to engage in again?
But
I don't think
so. There's no evidence other than your opinion. There's no evidence that this is this is a recruiting tool.
We don't know.
ISIS and Al Qaeda have said
that
much.
Do we absolutely know that?
Yeah, listen, that the recruitment videos actually show Americans torturing people at Abu Ghraib. We know that there is a cause and an effect there. We know that there is at least a link and definitely a cause and effect.
And if that video did not exist, there would not be people in that part of the world that hate the United States for who we are.
That's not what he said. In fairness to our beleaguered colleague here, that's not what you said. What you said was certain actions of ours. Professor Pape argues persuasively at some length that our presence in the region is a recruiting tool.
Before we invaded Iraq in March 2003, there was no suicide terrorism in Iraq. After we invaded Iraq in March 2003, within a week, suicide terrorism began against our forces, and we touched off the largest suicide terrorist campaign in modern history, and it's anti-American.
Right.
There is a much larger set of people who maybe they didn't like us before, but now they're dying to kill us.
Literally, yeah.
And that is something that is a whole degree of problem with Iraq. We did not have before 9/11. Iraq simply was not a problem.
And how do we address, as you've said, a growing audience of people in that part of the world who hate us? They're getting recruits from around the world. How do we change them? We can't give them chewing gum like we did in World War II. How do we get their attention?
What do you think, Art?
I think we can
give us an answer.
We are giving them chewing gum and a hell of a lot more. We're giving them modern communications, women's participation in the political system, economic growth, even in Afghanistan, which is the test case to watch. We should give maximum emphasis to reliable and useful intelligence. There's no evidence.
Why will they love it? Answer the question. Why will they love us if we don't do anything?
What I'm trying to say is whether they love us or not, they are embracing the rule of law and democracy. Afghanistan is a very important.
No.
Afghanistan is what I'm emphasizing, Bruce, because I want to get away from the particularly destructive subject of ISIS.
The Frankenstein.
Why do you want to avoid ISIS?
I don't want to avoid.
You're making the point that every time we take some strong action, it's becoming a perpetrator. We took a strong action in Afghanistan.
There is no evidence in Afghanistan, which is the other country we invaded. In this case, we had allies, that the Taliban is growing any stronger or that Al-Qaeda is growing any stronger. Nor is there persuasive evidence that this is occurring in Pakistan. Nor is there persuasive evidence that this is occurring in vulnerable areas in the former Soviet Union. In the case of South Asia, economic growth, rights for women, chewing gum, which you mentioned glibly, but in fact to me relates to modern economic development and communications, is improving that area, and that's what we should look to.
And you think that's the terrorist down the street? They're having this intellectual discussion that you've.
No,
just
I'm trying to respond to Bruce Newmont's attack. In North Africa and the Middle East, there are similar trends. Now I'll conclude.
There are 1.4 billion Muslims in the world. The largest populations of Muslims are in Indonesia, they're in India,
yes.
A large number, nearly 100 million in Turkey. Why don't we talk about those? Because none of those 700,000 or more, nearly a billion, are doing anything to kill us.
That's right.
And it's because we have very positive relations there.
You can
Let's go to Pat in Morris, Illinois, listening to us on WLS. You're on the air. Pat, are you there?
Pleasure speaking with you.
Yes, go ahead, sir.
I'm a 4-year Army veteran. I was 11 Bravos. I was deployed over to Iraq. And the information that we received from our detainees, we used, or I I should say, our interrogators used sleep deprivation. They used threats. They used all kinds of other things on these people on the ground, and it led to actionable intel, which it helped out with our mission.
Not according to the Senate report.
Oh, well, he's talking about different detainees. So in Iraq, we detained at its high point 30,000 Iraqi citizens in prisons in Iraq that are not at all being discussed in the current report. So you were talking about this earlier. There's a whole set of the programs. And so whether or not you can get tactical intelligence from somebody on a street corner, it's like a gang member. If you pick up a gang member and you pick him up on a street corner today, you might be able to get him to tell you where he was supposed to be 3 hours from now. That's not the case from what we were doing in Guantanamo.
And here, secret prisons.
Yeah. And here's a question that we should ask. How many of those people, the 30,000 people that we detained, that we got actionable intelligence from in a war that we were not supposed to be in the first place, how many of those people are now acquiescing in ISIS's rule, or worse, joining ISIS in order to fight against us, in order to behead our men over there on the ground?
Well, that speaks to the point as why they should have been released.
Maybe or detained in the first place, or tortured in the first place.
Either one. Maybe they shouldn't have been detained, and if they were detained by mistake, maybe releasing them was a mistake.
And the whole question arises out of invading Iraq in the first place. We wouldn't have ISIS had we not toppled Saddam Hussein.
If they would have stayed there, we would have had fewer people on the battlefield, back on the battlefield. That was a mistake. Maybe they were detained wrongly. They were released wrongly.
And how long should we hold on to them for?
Maybe forever.
1,000 years?
That's shortly.
Indefinitely.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
My biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Give the gift of Larry King this holiday season. Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv. Bruce Dumont back at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. If you are in the Chicagoland area and looking for a very unique gift, we have a great gift. You can give the gift of Larry King, America's most talked about gift that a person will probably ever receive. All they do is Larry King has recorded over 40 questions for us. You or the person who is the recipient of this gift certificate comes down to the museum. They record the answers. We masterfully edit it together, and it looks like they have been interviewed by Larry King. And it can be an oral history for your parents, your grandparents, really for anybody. But again, it's a great opportunity, $24.95. Go to museum.tv, and I will tell you, it will be one of the most talked about gifts you ever give. $24.95. You come down here, a souvenir. They'll play it over and over and over again. The interview with Larry King, give the gift of Larry King at museum.tv. Let us now introduce, now that I've done my little commercial, let us now introduce our other guests, and we begin with Scott Hibbert. Tell us a little bit about you, Scott.
Yeah,
where are you from?
I'm actually originally from West Michigan, but I lived and worked in Washington, D.C. for 20 years, did my doctorate at Johns Hopkins University.
Who'd you work for?
I worked for Dale Bumpers, a Democratic senator from Arkansas, and Tom McMillan, a Democratic congressman from Annapolis, Maryland. And I now teach at DePaul University, and my most recent book is Religious Politics and Secular States, Egypt, India, and the U.S.
Okay. Khalil Morar, tell us a little bit who you are.
Yeah, thank you. Khalil Morar, I'm at Governor State University. I have two books. The first one is called The Arab Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy. The one that's forthcoming is called Middle East Conflicts, The Basics, in which I look at a variety of conflicts like the ones that we're discussing here, and I trace their origins. I do a variety of things, but my staple of teaching is in international relations and public policy.
Where are you from?
I was born in Kuwait,
and we migrated to this country in 1987. And I got to say, people like Helen and Gail, the callers that we had previously, and even, you know, people like Pat, are the reason why I came to this country. Their collective thought and really the sort of generosity of the American people, the exceptionalism of the American people, and really the beauty of this country, not just in land, but really our culture, our politics, is the reason why I'm here today. And I thank you for
Art
that.
Art Sear.
I'm the director of the Clausen Center for Rural Business in Carthage College in Kenosha, Wisconsin. And my first book is entitled Liberal Politics in Britain, and the most recent one is After the Cold War. I'm originally from Los Angeles.
Hollywood High.
Right.
I'm Robert Pape. I'm a professor at the University of Chicago and director of the Chicago Project on Security and Terrorism. I've been studying national security issues for 25 years. The first 15 years focused on air power. I did a big book called Bombing to Win, which looked at every air campaign in history, over 40 air campaigns, to figure out when they work and when they don't work. Also spent 3 years teaching for the U.S. Air Force, teaching conventional targeting strategy. Over the last 10-plus years, I focused on terrorism. I compiled the first complete database of all suicide attacks around the world, which many governments, including our government, has found very helpful. And that led on to a series of books which essentially deal with big data and terrorism. I published Dying to Win, first book on suicide terrorism, Cutting the Fuse, second book on suicide terrorism, and I'm now working on another book on militant targeting strategy, funded in part by the Pentagon, where we have analyzed, myself and a research team, 55,000 terrorist attacks to understand more in detail when they occur and when they don't occur. And so this is just a continuation of this big studies of terrorism.
And you've done a recent study also on the effectiveness of air power.
In the last month, my research team and I decided, with the Secretary Hagel being fired, Ashton Carter coming in, the whole issue of ISIS strategy, that we should look in more detail at our air strategy against ISIS. ISIS took Mosul in the middle of June 2014. 4-5 weeks later, early August, we started an air campaign against ISIS. We have, from that time until today, launched over 1,100 air attacks, airstrikes against ISIS. This study, which is, I think, the first to really try to figure out what has worked and what hasn't worked, is really quite interesting, because what you can see is that before the air campaign began, ISIS not only took Mosul and some parts of the Sunni majority provinces in Iraq, but was threatening Kurdish provinces, Erbil, the Mosul Dam, Mount Sinjar. It was also threatening some of the Shia areas just south of Baghdad. Well, one of the big undiscussed events of the last 4 months is a dog that hasn't barked, which is our air campaign has focused specifically on those areas of the perimeter and has been really quite powerful in smashing those threats that ISIS was pushing out. Now, that's not all, it's not all good. At the same time, we were very successful in containing ISIS along the perimeter. We have not been very successful inside the box, so to speak. There, ISIS has gained some control in Ramadi and Hit, which are cities in the inside of the Sunni area in Iraq. Why? It's because we're able to partner with the Shia and the Kurds on the perimeter to make air power and ground power work together. We haven't even really tried, to be honest, a little bit surprising, to work with Sunnis inside the perimeter. And in fact, there have been some Sunnis that have even asked for our help. Just last week, there was members of the Nineveh Police, which many of your listeners might not know, is a Sunni police force, meeting with Obama in the White House, asking for support. And it's really quite striking that basically, while we've had some successes, there's an area that's been limited, and that may be where we go next.
Okay. We're going to go back to calls. Let's go to Steve listening to us in Indianapolis. Go ahead. You're on the air. Steve, are you there? Steve, are you there? Steve is gone. How about Thomas in Fort Collins, Colorado, listening to us on POTUS?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. I've been listening for about half an hour now, but I, you know, and I think so. My thoughts have switched around a bit from my original purpose of calling in, which was to point out that, you know, this report that you keep referring to is really just a Democratic highlight reel of a big report it's probably important to note that that, or put that in the context that it is.
Mm-hmm. John McCain supports it.
Well, actually, I'd respond to that in two ways. One is Dianne Feinstein is a very conservative Democrat, and she supported the Bush administration's policies. Dianne Feinstein has supported the Bush administration policies on any number of things throughout expanded authorities under the Patriot Act, FBI letters, all that. And so it's very surprising that she would be leading the charge on this. And the second thing is you know, John McCain is the other major activist who's a very strong supporter of the report, and he's, as last I recall,
and so does Brandon Ron Paul.
Yeah. Thomas, go ahead. Your response.
My response to that is, you know, for you to say that Feinstein is a conservative Democrat, it puts everything into context. There's really no other reason to respond to that.
As Dr. Hibbard said, John McCain supports it.
Can I just jump in here? Tom, I don't know whether you listen to the show a lot. But
I'd like to hear what you have to say.
Well, here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to say that 99.9% of the time when Dianne Feinstein is talking about intelligence, I have respect for her. I think, in my view, she's one of my favorite Democrats. Now, I too am a little bit surprised that she's so far out on this particular report. I think she may be a little bit miffed because she feels that she's been lied to in her role as head of oversight.
Lied to and had her computers hacked by the CIA.
Yes. So, I mean, she has a reason to really be PO'd at the CIA. Generally speaking,
right.
I think Dianne Feinstein is one of the better Democrats in the United States Senate. But that's my opinion. We have a different opinion.
No, I appreciate your comment, but that really doesn't legitimize the report. It's a Democratic highlight reel of a big report is all it is.
Okay, let's Art Sear respond.
Can we agree on that?
It certainly has a Democratic slant to it.
I can agree with a caller in that the Democrats just got clobbered in a major national election running up to 2016.
Okay,
and I believe there are political motivations in that sense. I agree with you. You were going to say something?
Well, thank you, and I appreciate that. And I also wanted to point out that you were discussing whether or not American actions
promote
terrorists.
Yeah, promote
and,
acts against, yeah.
It's Don Rumsfeld's line.
I'd
just like to point out that, you know, I've had that argument before with folks, and my response to that is, did you watch television on September 12th?
Sure. And say more.
And if you did, you saw the Islamic world celebrating in the streets.
No, they weren't.
Oh.
No, they weren't.
They were.
That's bogus. The Islamic world celebrating in the street is a lie. Look, there were some people celebrating, and they happened to be Muslim, they happened to be Christian, they happened to be Jewish, they happened to be Buddhist and Indian. But look, that speaks to the point that – go ahead, what? That speaks to the point that Islamophobia is something that needs to be eradicated from this earth, just as anti-Semitism should be eradicated, just as any hatred should be eradicated. And we as a nation have to act consistent with the belief that we are not only the finest country on earth, but we are a country that is premised on the rule of law and on the notion that all men and women are created equally and that they're endowed by the Creator with certain unalienable rights, amongst those are the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Torture is inconsistent with that.
The caller is correct that in some of the early video in the wake of 9/11 showed Arabs celebrating in the streets. It may have been a small group, but that picture is out there, and that is
ironically
there were Americans celebrating too.
There were a few Europeans that was picked up by TV.
There were protests.
There was not video. There was not video.
There was Christian evangelists that were saying that 9/11 is justified because our country is evil.
There was not video within 12 hours of the attack on the United States of any Americans celebrating. It may have come later, but not then. Back shortly.
Pastor Hagee said.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida, so why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes.
revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Back in Chicago, thank you very much for joining us tonight. We're going to go back to calls in just a moment, but I do want to take a moment again, people listening on our flagship station, WLS Radio, and throughout the state of Illinois, and this is also, I think, important maybe to those around the country as well, but in Illinois, we lost a terrific public servant since we were last together. Judy Bart Topinka was one of the most successful Republican politicians in the history of the state, the first woman elected as state treasurer. She had recently been reelected as the comptroller of the state. She was a periodic guest on this program, good friend personally and professionally, and I think one of those unique politicians that could actually mix well and be comfortable and be respected by those who were Republicans and those that were Democrats. She was a compromiser, but the most important thing about Judy Bart Topinka, I don't think I ever saw her without a smile on her face. She loved people. She loved her profession. Her son, Joe, who she loved very much, is left behind with grandchildren that she was just in the process of getting to know, 70 years old, died of a stroke suddenly. And again, a real good friend, but a great politician. And it was a year where, although the other leading light of politics in the state and the city, Jane Byrne, died a couple of months ago, I don't think there could have been two different personalities than Jane Byrne and Judy Bart Topinka. But they were two giant political figures who made significant contributions to this state. And they will both be lost. But on a special note tonight, Judy Bart Topinka, rest in peace.
Well said.
Tony in Franklin Park, Illinois. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. You know, it makes me sick to hear our politicians give this information to our enemies and future enemies, which then helps them to develop tactics to train their soldiers to be able to sort of avoid giving answers to this because they're realizing it's not being torture, they're not going to be killed. It's just mental anguish is what they're causing. It's not physical torture. It's waterboarding. And, you know, I was a former interrogator with the Marine Corps and with the Air Force. I know what this stuff's all about. And you have to get information as soon as possible. Otherwise, it's totally worthless when you get a month later. And, you know, but you know, we can't go overboard and, you know, really, really torture people. It's not right. Even though they might do it to us, that's not a good excuse. But, you know, information has to be gotten as soon as possible. And I think Nancy Pelosi, Harry, and all those political hacks, they should be tried for treason for giving information to our enemies, current and future ones, you know?
All right, thank you for your call. Let's go to Camaro in Houston, Texas, listening to us on POTUS. You're on the air.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Hello. I would like to make the point that any consternation about whether or not the revelations in the recent CIA torture report being used as a potential rallying cry for Islamic extremism misses the point completely, because Islamic extremists hated us before any of these revelations, and they will continue to do so afterwards. The problem is not us, it's them. The revelations in this report damage our moral credibility, our moral high ground, negligibly compared to the violence and the savagery and the barbarism exhibited for years and years by the extremist Islamic world. And that's what we need to be talking about.
Okay, actually, if I can chime in. So, Scott, in response to the first questioner, or the first caller, we're talking about more than just waterboarding. And this is one of the things I find fascinating about the report. You know, we're also talking about isolation, sleep deprivation, 20-hour interrogations, stress positions, walling, where they slam people into walls, shackling, environmental manipulation. And waterboarding is one of the many things. And so it's this comprehensive set of tactics that were authorized and were institutionalized. Now, again, not to sound like a broken record, the question comes back, you know, was it ultimately effective? And what the report highlights is it's not. And this is where I want to get specifically to the caller. There was a big debate between the FBI and the CIA in terms of how to get information out of detainees. And the FBI pursued a strategy of rapport building. And for the most part, they were actually very, very effective. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the report, a lot of the actionable intelligence report or material they got was got before they introduced the enhanced interrogation techniques, not after. And so again, part of this is about trying to set the record straight and trying to develop policies for the future.
And I would say, the Cameron's talking about the moral high ground. We wouldn't have the moral high ground had we lied about our actions. I think it shows moral high ground that we actually are coming forward to not just the citizens of this country, but to the world and saying, look, we were wrong. We should not have done this. That is the moral high ground. That's the definition of it.
Tom in Youngstown, Ohio, last caller tonight. Go ahead. You got 30 seconds.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to you and your guests.
Same to you.
War is not a sport where if you don't win this year, there's always next year. And if you take a look at 9/11, arguably it was worse than Pearl Harbor from the standpoint it hit the mainland, killed 3,000 civilians in the financial district of the United States, penetrated Washington, D.C., which hadn't happened since 1812, and hit the Pentagon, our heart of our military. And that was done by 19 al-Qaeda members.
Yep.
We don't know how many sleeper cells there were in this country. There was a sense of urgency. And I really think that when you take a look at what we did compared to what the North Vietnamese did or what the Nazis did, it's almost like college hazing. And by the way,
good
John
point.
McCain's a hero, but he's emotionally too close to the topic of torture. He's like the parents of someone who was slain with a gun wanting all guns banned.
Okay, Tom, on that note, thank you very much for your call. We do appreciate it. Our guest, Art Sear, thanks very much for joining us. Robert Pape, Khalil Marar, and Scott Hibbard, thank you all for being with us. This program is a Gen B production produced in association with WLS Talk Radio. Our thanks to Colin Bobbitt and Dan Dorfman for their assistance in the production of this program. We will be back next Sunday night, same time, same station. Hope you will all join us then. Until that time, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
My biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Give the gift of Larry King this holiday season. Order your gift certificate now.